Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the August 5th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Tuscola School Board, Ben Osdall to succeed Alexander as superintendent by Jacob Hamm. East Prairie Middle School principal Jared Van Osdall will be replacing Gary Alexander after he retires in 2028. The board approved Van Osdall's contract on Monday's meeting. Van Osdall will be paid $132,500 for his first year, with his salary being negotiated by the board for 2029 and 2030 at a later date, according to the agreement. He will also receive 25 days of paid vacation, 2 personal days, and 17 paid sick days. Alexander said the plan is for the 2026-2027 school year to be a normal year, with the following year a transition year. He said the board plans to hire an assistant principal at East Prairie for the 2027-28 school year, and Van Osdall will mentor that person, who will then become principal in 2028 through 2029. During the transition year, Alexander will mentor Van Osdall to take over as superintendent. I encouraged Jared to get his degree because I felt he would do a good job, Alexander said. He said the board has been informally interviewing Van Osdall for a year and had formal interview during a special meeting in June. The board has known my intentions to retire for a year and a half, Alexander said. We've been discussing the best process to replace me during this time. I am blessed to be in a position to lead a school district with strong community support, wonderful staff, and fellow leaders that share a similar dedication for their students, Van Osdall said. I am looking forward to maintaining my current position while working with Mr. Alexander and the current board to continue to place our school district in the best possible position to service our students and families. Alexander and Van Osdall previously worked together in the Arthur District. Alexander, a Tuscola graduate, became superintendent here in 2019 and hired Van Osdall a year later. According to Van Osdall's contract, the superintendent will evaluate and set goals for the district regarding student performance pertaining to the state standards, technology, and employees. The board will evaluate the superintendent's performance at least once per year in writing. The board will decide by April 1, 2031, whether or not to renew Van Osdall's contract. If the board does not submit a formal renewal, Van Osdall's contract will automatically be renewed for 1 year. My motivation to pursue the position stems from my dedication to leading in the district as well as serving our students, staff, and community, Van Osdall said. The principals of each of the schools also gave their monthly reports at last week's meeting. Construction is almost done at both the middle and high schools and the gymnasiums. The schools are installing new bleachers and railings. Construction is finished on the playground at the elementary school, according to the principal. The elementary school's construction is about done, with some drywall repairs needing to be finished. The construction costs led to a temporary increase in operating costs for the month of July. The district spent approximately $512,000 on construction costs for the month. The district also voted to approve approximately $7,000 in donations from various people and organizations in the community, including a nearly $2,100 donation from the Rotary for a new smart board in one of the classrooms at the elementary school. The rest of the donations will be used for various extracurricular activities and programs such as FFA, athletics, and band. The board also approved to accept Caden Bayer's resignation as assistant high school football coach. The board also approved the hiring of Rebecca Dunn as special education teacher at the elementary school. The next article from the Arcola City Council, Plan New TIF Area Inc. District Deal by David Porter. The Arcola City Council took its first formal step toward creating a new tax increments financing, TIF, district at Monday's meeting. The district is intended to help develop housing on the city's southwest corner. The council passed 2 resolutions to start the process by forming the TIF. City Administrator Bill Wagner said it is the first step of many. A public hearing is scheduled for September 21st, prior to the council meeting on that same day. The first resolution is to initiate a feasibility study. Wagner has previously said that creating a new TIF will not need approval from all of the taxing bodies impacted. Under TIF, the taxes collected by the various taxing bodies are frozen, and an increase in property revenue goes to the TIF. A typical TIF lasts more than 20 years. Proponents of TIF districts say the increases in valuation would not occur if not for the TIF. The Arcola Township has been the most vocal in opposing TIF districts in the city. The city previously purchased 10 acres of land for housing development and hopes to purchase another 10 acres. Wagoner has said previously the developer has shown interest in building new houses there. The council also moved forward with another attempt at State Parks grant for $960,000 in upgrades to Kellymore Park. The city was turned down last year but has secured similar grants in the past. The Arcola Foundation is kicking in $35,000. The grant could provide $462,000, with the city paying $462,000. The second phase of improvements would include a sensory playground, a half-mile loop of sidewalks, a butterfly garden, an educational pollinator garden, new lighting on the soccer fields, and a baseball diamond. Alderman Gilberto Moreno expressed concern about noise in relation to the location of the proposed sensory playground, which would be between the existing gazebo and the large soccer field. He suggested that children who benefit from a sensory playground can be bothered by noise. It was discussed that trees or shrubs could be planted as a buffer to reduce noise, but there are not many other places to locate a playground. The proposed location is also near restrooms, shelter, and water. The council also approved an agreement with the Prairie Lake Homeowners Association for drainage improvements. Wagner said some of the planned work is the city's responsibility. The city will pay about $17,000 on the project, while homeowners will pay $20,000. However, the city agreed to loan the association their portion of the project at 3% interest. The project is expected to stop flooding in the east side of the subdivision. The council also authorized the city attorney to take legal action on a burnout house at 310 North Locust Street, but Wagner asked that the lawsuit be delayed. He said the legal action was intended to nudge the property owners to raise the structure. He said he thinks the move has already worked, as the city received a letter stating that the owner of the property has received financing to tear down the burned building and to build a new home there. Wagner reported that the city attorney has also filed a foreclosure notice on property at 239 West Main Street. He also reported that Arcola Rec has raised funds for a scoreboard at the rec field and that Graber's will be installing it this month. The zoning report for the month showed two construction permits, an addition for Terry Overman at 111 Hawthorne Court in the amount of $139,000, and a residence for Stephen Green at 305 East Madison valued at $165,000. Total fees were $388. Mayor Jesus Garza and the Alderman Brent Budd were absent. Scott Hensley served as mayor pro tem. The next article, edition of Gazillion, latest update at Atwood's Raja Memorial Park. Dedication scheduled for Friday, August 21st, prior to Apple Dumpling Festival. What started as a project to honor one of Atwood's most accomplished natives turned into a community initiative involving the support of hundreds of citizens, Atwood Hayment High School alumni, and several local businesses to complete Raja Memorial Park. A dedication ceremony to celebrate the accomplishment of the park with the Raja Memorial Garden Gazillion is scheduled for 5 p.m. on Friday, August 21st, prior to the start of Atwood's Apple Dumpling Festival. The Raja Memorial Park Gazillion will allow visitors a place to sit and reflect on the history of Atwood Hammond High School and local veterinarians who serve our nation or made the ultimate sacrifice during their military service. Major local sponsors for the Gazillion and Park are First State Bank and Trust, Kirby Medical Group, Schrock's Woodworking, Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, On Point Storage Solutions, LLC, Harris Companies Incorporated, Top Flight Grain Cooperative Incorporated, Cleveland Grain System, Copper Creek Electric, and Sloan Implement Company. Communities like Atwood and Hammond so often have their identities are rooted in their history, said Mike Atwood, president and CEO of First State Bank and Trust. It's pretty inspiring to me that people who have left the towns care so much to really try and preserve at least part of the history. It's a type of thing we'd be proud to be part of. The term gazillion came about when members of the coordinating committee split on whether the structure should be a gazebo or a pavilion. After much debate, members compromised and selected a hybrid structure with features of both that has been referred to as a gazillion since. People come to us for help, said Heidi Epperson, Director of Marketing and Community Relations for Kirby Medical Center and the AHHS graduate. They trusted us. The donation to Raja Memorial Park reflects Kirby's commitment to support a community in Piatt County that supported us for generations. In addition to the major sponsored, hundreds of Atwood Hammond alumni and friends in the community purchased paver bricks or volunteered their own services in supporting and making additions to the park over the last 6 years. You've got to give back. That's part of it, said Stan Harris, Vice President, Electrical Divisions for Harris Companies, and another AHS graduate. We're very fortunate in Atwood that there are a lot of people who've done a lot for this community. Ryan Bowles, a local business owner and insurance agent who, with his wife, AHS alum Jamie, own On Point Storage Solutions, LLC, donated a hog for a fundraising raffle in the summer of 2025 and knows the importance of local support. At Little League games, you see the signs hanging from the fences, the names of businesses on the back of the jerseys, Bowles said. They're not sponsored by Coca-Cola, Walmart, or Costco. They're sponsored by local farmers and local businesses. These people are investing in their communities and the kids. Support also came from the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, located in Decatur. Atwood is a small town, Decatur is a small town, yet so many great things come from this area, Foundation CEO Natalie Beck said. This is a way in which people invest in each other. Top Flight Grain Cooperative Incorporated is a farmer-owned business so critical in moving grain from the area farms to market. Chief Financial Officer Jeremy Welch and his wife Stacy are both AHHS graduates. Even though we are a larger corporation spread across a couple of different counties, we still touch Atwood and beyond, Welch said. A lot of our farmer owners are still in the area, so we just wanted to be able to help. Welch said he's impressed by a multifaceted project that honors veterans, honors the legacy of Tug Wilson, and is located to the former site of the high school. This is certainly a big part of the community, he said. We're happy to be part of it. Sloan Implement Company has held a prominent spot in Route 36 on the south side of Atwood for decades, and store manager Cody Hatcher knows the importance of the local agricultural community to his business and the services he provides to local farmers. We have a real good customer base here, Hatcher said. We like to help out where we can in the community. Brad Cleveland set up his Cleveland Grain Systems business right next door to the park on grounds that it was once home to the high school and believes in being a good neighbor. I couldn't find a place in Macon County or Decatur that I really like, Cleveland said. I think Atwood's a great, friendly little town. Levi and Leanna Schrock live nearby and own Schrock's Woodworking, which offers a complete line of handmade cabinets and home furnishings just south and east of Atwood, close enough to feel a sense of community. Levi attended schools in Arcola, but Leanna was educated in the Atwood schools, where her children and grandchildren also attended. Levi's hope for Atwood's future are why he continues to support its businesses, often bicycling to town to enjoy a slice of pizza, for example, its school and community projects like Raja Memorial Park. That's the thing about living close by, Schrock said. It's a nice little town, and I just like the small town atmosphere. Plans for the park began in 2018 when AHHS alum Vanessa Curry came across information about an Atwood native who played a major role in the national development of amateur sports. Kenneth Tug Wilson, a 1914 graduate of Atwood High School, grew up on a farm outside Atwood and attended the University of Illinois, where he was captain of the Fighting Illini basketball team and star on the track and field squad. Wilson would compete in the 1920 Olympics as javelin and discus thrower. After college, he was the athletic director at Drake and Northwestern before becoming the second ever Big Ten Conference commissioner from the 1945 to 61 and president of the U.S. Olympic Committee from 53 to 65. My dad grew up in Atwood. I grew up in Atwood. We had never heard of this man, Curry said. As a journalist, I knew his story had to be told. She started a campaign to establish the Illinois State Historical Marker in Atwood to share Wilson's story. It became the first marker in the state to be dedicated to an individual sports figure. Curry researched and wrote Wilson's history, inscribed on the marker, and later turned the research into a book, A Gold Medal Man, Biography of Kenneth Tug Wilson. Marker was dedicated on August 22, 2020, the year that marked the 100th anniversary of Wilson's participation in the Antwerp Olympics. Raja Memorial Park was dedicated a year later during a ceremony on August 21, 2021. The event included a recitation of the school's history, singing the Raja fight song, and a proclamation from village president Bill Fleming. He later said the city added light poles and lights to the park and upgraded the gravel parking lot on Magnolia Avenue to a concrete pad. The park includes a memorial to local veterans, sponsored by the American Legion James Reeder Post 770. That includes three flagpoles, granite memorials, and a military artillery piece. A plaque relating to history of the school and the school's unique nickname of Raja stands next to the Wilson Historical Marker. Following the 2026 dedication, Raja Memorial Park will be turned back to the village at Atwood. Members of the Raja Memorial Park Committee, including Curry, retired Atwood Hammond librarian Marcia Bergener, longtime local newspaper reporter Doris Elmore, American Legion commander Ken Caraway, and AHHS alumni Kent Brown. The next article, Record Herald News, merges with the County Chronicle. Starting this week, the Record Herald News is now part of the County Chronicle. The merger adds coverage at Atwood, Bement, Cerro Gordo, and Mount Zion. The Record Herald News, RHN, was already part of the Better Newspapers group of publications and included the B section, but had its own front section until this week. The Chronicle is now a successor newspaper for the RHN, as well as the Arthur Graphic Clarion, Arcola Record Herald, and the Journal, Tuscola and Villa Grove. Successor newspaper is a legal term for purposes of public notices, regional editor David Porter explained. Starting up a newspaper must publish a year before becoming legal newspapers, while successor newspapers pick up the legal status from their consolidated papers. Porter continued, there have to be a lot of newspaper consolidations across the country in recent years as costs increase and reader dynamics change, but it's not a new phenomenon. The oldest paper in our lineage, the Arcola Record Herald, was itself a century-old combination of the Arcola Record, the Arcola Herald, and the Arcolian. Its history dates back to 1866, with roots even further back as the Arcola Record sprang from the old Douglas County Shield in Tuscola. RHN was created in 2021 when Southern Piatt Record Herald merged with the Mount Zion Regional News. The Southern Piatt Record Herald was a merger between the Atwood Herald and the News Record, which was a combination of the Cerro Gordo News and Bement Record. "We wish we could produce a separate newspaper for each community," Porter said, "but it just isn't feasible economically." On the plus side, subscribers receive a bigger newspaper with information from a broader geographic area, thus our motto, connecting our communities. He added, "As always, we welcome submissions for all of the communities we serve. We're always looking for photos, stories, and events to share. All of our contact names, numbers, and email addresses are in the masthead, which is on page 4 this week." And the last first page article, Amtrak train crashes into semi-truck in Arcola by Jacob Hamm. Several local and state agencies responded to a crash involving Amtrak's Saluki train and a semi-truck last Tuesday at the railroad crossing near Route 45 and Illinois Route 133 in Arcola. The crash occurred just before noon on Tuesday when authorities were alerted to the accident. Illinois State Police, the Arcola Police Department, and other Illinois Department of Transportation responded to the crash site. The crash saw the railroad crossing bar and pole flung into a ditch nearby with a tractor-trailer bed crashing into them into a train car while driving eastward. ISP put out a statement that reads, "ISP Troop 7 responding to the above location for a crash involving a tractor-trailer, pulling a flatbed trailer, and an Amtrak train. The Amtrak train was carrying approximately 60 passengers. All passengers were transported to the community center. No injuries were reported initially. However, two passengers requested to be transported from the community area to a local hospital. Illinois Route 133 between U.S. Route 45 and Oak Street is closed. This is an ongoing investigation. No further information is available." The EMTs were on the scene within minutes, coming through all the cars, making sure everyone was okay, said Monica Burge, a passenger on the train. "They were calm and confident, which helped the situation more than they knew. No one panicked, and only a couple of people got excited about it at all." She sent a letter to the city of Arcola praising the local response and accommodations made by the community center. "We did not have to be part of an actual train wreck on our agenda," she said. "It was the craziest thing I've ever been through. It could have been totally different had Arcola not stepped up for us." The road remained closed most of the day. An Amtrak train was seen leaving the accident site after crash wreckage was removed. An investigation examiners examined the site. The train was traveling southward. The truck is owned by Best Specialized H&H Holdings, LLC, a company based in South Point, Ohio. We'll move now to the obituaries. Charles Edward Patterson, 76, of Tuscola, passed away on Sunday, July 26, 2026, at his residence. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, August 5th, at the Cartwright Cemetery, rural Tuscola, with Reverend Tony Crouch officiating. Hilligosh Schrader Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. Marla Faith Miller, infant daughter of Samuel and Louise Ann Yoder Miller, passed away at 9:55 a.m. on Thursday, July 30th at St. Anthony's Hospital in Effingham. Marla was born at 1:18 a.m. on Thursday, July 30th, 2026 at St. Anthony's Hospital in Effingham. Funeral services were held Sunday, August 2nd at the Danny Miller Jr. Residence, Arcola. Bishop Lamar E. Miller officiated. Barrett was in the Baghdad Cemetery in rural Arcola. Visitation was held Sunday at the Danny Miller Jr. residence. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Judith Ann Vukalich, 86, of Tuscola, formerly of Davenport, Iowa, passed away at 11:55 a.m. Tuesday, July 28, 2026, at the Haven of Tuscola. As per Judy's wishes, no services will be held. The next article, Newman Property Owner Needs Help Rehoming Cats, by Jacob Hamm. A local property owner wants the community to help rehome a dozen or so cats from a property they own. The property is located in 300 block of North Broadway Street in Newman and is currently for sale. The home will likely be torn down after it is sold due to the condition of the property. A concerned resident in the area wanted to tour the property and discovered the cats inside after inspecting the property from a distance. The resident was concerned about the cat's safety due to the conditions of the property they are currently living in. The resident reached out to the Newman Police Department, Douglas County Animal Control, and Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and the City of Newman. Newman Police Department did a welfare check on the animals and connected the concerned resident to the property owner in an attempt to rehome the animals. The concerned resident was able to get inside with the help of the property owner later that day. Two of the cats were taken into custody for Douglas County Animal Control. There are still multiple cats living inside the house. The owner of the property does feed the cats and gives them water, but is not able to make it over there every day, according to the concerned resident and neighbors of the property. The concerned resident said they spent a considerable amount of time at the property after discovering the cats inside and said the owner did not show up for almost 2 days. Inside the property were at least a dozen cats, including four kittens that were just born within the last 2 weeks. The cats had been there for several years, according to the Newman Police Department. Next article, Governor Pritzker signs 87 new bills by Ben Zielinski. Most Illinois retailers will be required to accept cash payments beginning in 2028 under a bill Governor J.B. Pritzker signed on Friday. House Bill 4592 requires retailers that employ someone to process in-person consumer transactions must accept cash payments on purchases under $500, though the businesses do not have to accept bills larger than $20. The requirement does not apply to self-checkout machines, overnight sales, if a business runs out of cash, memberships-only businesses, or phone or internet purchases. Businesses that do not follow the law will have to pay fines. For many Illinois residents, cash remains a dependable and necessary way to pay for everyday purchases, Senator Christopher Belt, Democrat of Swansea, said in a statement. People deserve the freedom to choose how they pay. The measure was one of 87 bills Pritzker signed on Friday. Jury pay. Employers will now have to pay their employees their full rate of pay while they are serving on duty unless under House Bill 4844. Businesses with 25 or fewer employees are exempt from the requirement, which begins immediately. CPR practice. House Bill 4788 requires schools beginning in the 2028-2029 school year to provide breasted and non-breasted mannequins for CPR practice in middle school and high school. The goal is to give students more practice with female victims who studies show are less likely to receive help from bystanders when suffering cardiac arrest. When someone's life is on the line, every second counts, Senator Laura Ellman, Democrat of Naperville, said in a statement. More inclusive, realistic CPR training helps people act quickly and save lives. Workload report. Senate Bill 3314 requires higher education institutions to provide more transparency about how many credits their faculty members are teaching. The law requires the state's colleges and universities to, beginning on September 20th, 2028, report annually the number of credit hours being taught by full, part-time faculty members. The report would be organized by tenure status and discipline. Lawmakers supporting the bill said the goal is to provide more transparency for students and educators about the higher education system and ensure faculty members are receiving necessary support. This legislation helps shine the light on who is doing the teaching in our colleges and universities by making clear how many credit hours are being taught by full-time versus part-time faculty, Illinois Education Association President Carl Genke said in a statement. Our students and their families deserve to know who's leading the bulk of the classes at their colleges and universities. Human trafficking. Drivers on Illinois interstates will soon notice more information about human trafficking at rest stops. House Bill 4654 requires the Illinois Department of Transportation to install signs with resources for human trafficking victims in bathrooms in all rest areas beginning immediately. Airport noise. Senate Bill 4041 requires O'Hare and Midway airports in Chicago to conduct noise studies every 5 years, beginning at the end of 2030. The study must map out how sound is distributed around the airport and forecast how noise will be distributed going forward. Mental health treatment. House Bill 5193 allows more patients to be transported by ambulance to a mental health institution rather than a hospital emergency room beginning immediately. The law now allows people under the influence of drugs or alcohol to be transported to approved mental health facilities if EMTs determine that's more appropriate location and it is approved by their supervisors. The next article, Cheek shares information about Arthur School construction progress. Arthur Rotary Club met July 23rd and enjoyed the presentation by member Shannon Cheek on the progress so far with the demolition and following rebuilding of the ALAH High School in Arthur. Cheek showed photos of the various stages of the demolition as well as drawings and depictions of the proposed new building. Demolition is complete and the construction has begun. However, 2 days were lost after 12-inch depth of our local very black dirt had to be removed from the building site and replaced with dirt containing clay for increased stability, which was brought in. Even with that, Cheek, the current district superintendent, said the project is reasonably on schedule. Many questions were asked and answered, and all members were invited to contact him for a tour now and in the future, as anyone who is interested, District 305 high school students will attend Lovington's building for the 26-27 school year, and Lovington Elementary School students will join Arthur students at the Arthur Grade School. The photo shown is rendering in the proposed building, which will be on one level but sits basically on the footprint of the original building. The next article, Judge Denies Trump Administration Access to Illinois Voter Data by Peter Hancock. A federal judge ruled late Friday that Illinois is not required to hand over its complete, unredacted voter registration data, including sensitive personal information, to the Trump administration. In a 14-page opinion, Judge Colleen Lawless reached the same conclusion as judges in 18 other federal districts and one appellate circuit who have ruled on nearly identical cases. She found that the Civil Rights Act of 1960 does not give the U.S. Attorney General general auditing power to demand voter data. No court has yet ruled in favor of the administration's demand for voter data. She also said the Department of Justice failed to provide any factual basis for suggesting state officials had done anything wrong in maintaining the state's voter registration database, that it offered no legitimate purpose for seeking the information. The Attorney General's demand is deficient in both its sustained stated basis and purpose and cannot be enforced against Illinois State Board of Education Executive Director Bernadette Matthews, Lawless wrote. Demand for data. The Justice Department began demanding access to its state's unredacted voter registration rolls shortly after President Donald Trump took office for a second term in 2025. The list includes sensitive personal information such as dates of birth, driver's license numbers, and partial social security numbers. What election law now law expert David Becker has referred to as the Holy Trinity of ID theft. In August 2025, the State Board of Elections gave the DOJ a copy of its statewide voter registration database with sensitive information redacted. That same information it makes available to candidates, committees, and other political parties, but lawyers for DOJ said that was insufficient. In its petitions, DOJ said it needed the complete database to ascertain whether states were meeting their legal duties under federal law to maintain accurate and up-to-date voter rolls and to take affirmative steps to purge the rolls of ineligible voters, including non-citizens. DOJ cited a provision of the Civil Rights Act giving the Attorney General authority to demand in writing from state election officials any record or paper related to an election that has taken place in the previous 22 months. But attorneys representing outside groups that intervened in the case, Illinois case, argued that it was not only a pretext and that the DOJ's real purpose was to purge state voter rolls of suspected non-citizens by cross-checking their rolls with National Citizenship Database. Court ruling. In her opinion, Lawless did not address that alternative theories about DOJ's motive. Instead, she focused on the state's or agency's stated reason. She said the Civil Rights Act does not give federal investigators blanket authority to demand records from state election officials and that it requires them to show both a basis and purpose for the demand. Lawyers for the Justice Department argued they met that obligation simply by stating the legal authority that the state statute gives to demand information, but Lawless rejected that argument. If the Attorney General could simply state his demand with a statement of any purpose whatsoever, the requirements that he specify his purpose and his base, it would be pointless, and it would provide him with unfettered authority to demand voter records, Lawless wrote. She said the Civil Rights Act of 1960 was enacted to combat racial discrimination in voting, and that a demand for records under the law must relate to Congress's rationale behind granting the Attorney General investigatory authority over certain federal voting records. Congress did not confer a general auditing power to the DOJ over state elections, officials, she wrote. The next article, takeaway from a bucket trip list to Italy, So There I Was by Pete Buckley. My wife and I recently returned from a bucket list vacation to Italy. I remember learning about Rome, Florence, Venice, and Pompeii at elementary and high school. I learned how Rome was a dynasty before Christ, B.C., was born, and I recall hearing about how Romans had built massive structures like the Colosseum and the Pantheon, while great artists like Michelangelo and Raphael came along later in the Middle Ages and created sculptures and paintings that are still considered among the greatest artistic pieces in world history. For centuries, people like Machiavelli, Da Vinci, Galileo, Dante Alighieri, Donatello roamed Italy and brought about great beauty that has lasted for ages. It was wonderful to tour Italy and see so many majestic sights. Here's my short and sweet review of Italy. You also cannot throw a rock anywhere in any metropolitan city in Italy without hitting a beautiful cathedral or place that sells gelato. The churches are magnificent and they are huge. According to the tour guide, you could fit the gigantic St. Patrick's Cathedral, located in New York City. St. Patrick's can accommodate 3,000 people easily inside St. Peter's Basilica and have room for several more churches. St. Peter's can accommodate 60,000 people. The sculptures, the painting, the mosaics located throughout Italy are all gorgeously made, and they capture religious figures as well as people from mythology, like the David sculpture from David versus Goliath story, a sculpture by Michelangelo. As for gelato, I can personally testify that while Italy may lack universal air conditioning, they more than make up for this deficiency by having multiple gelato shops on every street I ventured onto during my travels in Italy. Gelato is often considered a superior to ice cream due to the lower fat content, denser texture, richer flavor, and warmer serving temperature, which together creates a more intense and satisfying taste experience. According to experts, the internet, gelato is deeply rooted in Italian culture, often enjoyed fresh in small batches at gelaterias. The experience of savoring gelato is as much about texture and flavor as it is about the social artisanal contact, enhancing its appeal over mass-produced ice cream. Gelato comes in every flavor imaginable, but is known for its pistachio, chocolate, and hazelnut flavors. That is all the time we have this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye, and see you again next week.